Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at your home and inspecting your home a little bit and taking a look at maybe some spring maintenance things. Maybe there's some repairs. Maybe there's some things you'd like to do to your home this spring and summer. Well, we've got a couple guys who know what they're doing and can tell you how to do it. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. One of our guests, Ken, thanks for coming by.
It's good to see you again.
Yeah, great to see you. And John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates Fitchburg. Hi.
Nice to be here, Larry.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being up. You guys busy? John, you busy?
Very busy.
Yep, same here. It's springtime in Madison.
And so, that's good to hear that there's no shortage of work for you.
Nope, things are, winter was sluggish. Not horrible, but yeah. a lot of people interested in making their homes more energy efficient, and now that spring's coming, they want to fix them up and get ready for the summer.
Yeah, and you put up on your website, you've got a spring maintenance checklist.
Yeah, we do one every quarter. We put a checklist, and I'm not exactly sure how to get to it, but if you go on the site, and I think there's a newsletter page, and you can click on that and download it, and you can manipulate it and use it to your heart's content. It has just a list of a whole bunch of stuff you can do to your whole house.
At this time of the year. Yeah. Well, John, maybe switch to you for a second. What are some things that we should be doing about this time of year?
Well, in the springtime, we are finally past the heating season.
Yeah.
So we can get outside and we can look at that exterior envelope on the house.
Mm-hmm.
We need to take a look at paint. And, of course, if you have an old house, we need to consider lead and all of the regulations that have come in regarding lead paint the last few years, the certification of contractors, et cetera. We can get out there and take a look at the roofs, take a look at the windows, take a look at our caulking, start thinking about how to get that outside envelope nice and tight against those summer thunderstorms, and make sure those shingles will last through the hailstorms as well.
So...
That's true. Yeah, there's a lot of roofers who were busy last year. There's a lot of small things you can do too, like check your hose bibs to see if they're leaking, and little things like that. But they all add up to time, and if you hit them early in the season, then you can enjoy summer.
On the springtime, you can actually see what the soil levels are in your flower beds, and especially if you've got a house that was built in the last 10 years, that soil settles for years. Often we tell people 7 years. So do you have a 5% slope away from your foundation to keep that basement dry when we get the heavy rains?
You're going to have to come over and show me.
Well, 5% is easy to figure out. It's a half inch per foot, and that's actually the code requirement in the state of Wisconsin for a new house.
So there you go, and a good time to be looking at that. And I might have a problem in the one corner of our house. We're going to do a little digging around in one corner of our place where we get a little wet.
Yeah, that's right. I think there's a cement block, a little obstruction out in front of it, and holds water. And then when you get a lot of rain, it runs down behind. So we're going to try to dig that out for you.
By the way, let me give the number to call. If you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, a comment, even a photo right there. I went by a house that I used to live in on Wallace Avenue in Madison, in Monona, actually. And we had painted that house. I painted that house probably a year before I sold it. And that would have been 17 years now ago. And I went by that house, and the paint job on that house looked like brand new. I mean, it was the same paint job, and it looked great. And I thought, man, I got to remember who painted that for me because they did a marvelous job.
Well, there's a lot that goes into painting, and most of the work is in the prep work.
Yeah.
And there's also the issues with a lot of older homes. They insulate the homes, and moisture works its way through smaller areas and pushes the paint off, so you probably didn't have that in your case. But
no, it's aluminum siding, and they did a really good job of getting that. A lot of the paint came off the aluminum siding when they washed it.
Yeah, you can paint old aluminum siding when the finish gets chalky, and But it's all in the prep there too, you know.
Yeah,
so
he did a wonderful job.
Yeah, good.
I gotta find his name again though. Probably retired by this time. It's 17 years. Rachel in Waukon, Iowa. Your turn. Hi.
Hi. How are you guys?
Great.
Good. I have a rental property that has a wooden foundation. It was a HUD house, and I want to know how to preserve that.
Well, the wood that was used, if it followed the standard code for single-family and duplexes in the United States, would have had to have been a ground contact wood that had a 40-year guarantee on the treatment, mm-hmm. probably the old-fashioned copper arsenate, and the pounds of copper arsenate injected into the wood per cubic foot of wood is what determines how long it will last. How old is the house now, Rachel?
I'm guessing about 25 years.
About 25 years. Okay. A wood foundation will last forever if it's kept dry.
Okay.
And so that's really the big thing. Now, what the code required when that house was built is that they put a sheet of plastic over the exterior, which really didn't stop any water at all.
Right.
Are you getting water into the basement?
Not that I know of.
Excellent.
Some of the wood is exposed.
Above grade.
Above grade?
Or in the basement.
In the basement, yes. Right.
Yes.
Well, maintain your gutters and downspouts.
Okay.
Maintain that 6% slope, that half-inch per foot slope that Ken and I were talking about earlier.
Right.
And keep that wood as dry as possible.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if it gets wet is that eventually the treatment is going to leach out of it, and then it is going to start to decay. And is yours one, it's made of 2x6s or 2x8s more likely, with insulation in between the studs?
If you say so.
Well, and some
of the... I have no idea.
Okay. Well, it may be a finished basement, of course, and
yes,
often they use those in finished basements, so it's hard to see what's going on. But it is good to inspect them every now and then. If you have any doubts at all, call a local home inspector who actually knows something about wood foundations and have him come look at it. The other place where you can get information on wood foundations is from the Forest Products Laboratory, the U.S. Forest Products Laboratory, here in Madison, Wisconsin. And you can go online. They actually had a wood house, I think 40 or 50 years on site. I don't know if it's still there. It used to be.
I don't know.
But they actually built one and studied it. Wood foundations actually began in Wisconsin. An architect from Mount Horeb designed them originally, and the Forest Products Lab tested them. So you should be able to get useful information from them as well.
Okay, so I don't need to cover it with plastic again or anything? For aesthetic purposes, or just leave it as is?
Well, on the exterior, the ideal, if you want a wood foundation to last forever, what you would do is you would actually excavate the exterior of it, and you would put a peel-and-stick membrane on over it with drain tile and wash stone so that you keep all the water away from it. You could actually add an exterior foam insulation as well, and that would make it last virtually forever. But
okay.
If you are not having water coming in, if you're in well-drained soil, if you've got good slope, good gutters and downspouts, you really may be in good shape for at least another 25 years.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Dave in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have actually multi-pronged questions here, but one question is in regard to the 6% grade. How far away from the house do you need to have that grade extend?
10 feet.
10 feet, okay. Because I've got a swale that's probably right at the edge of 10 feet that I need to deal with. It becomes a little bit of a catch basin at times in the winter time.
And Dave, that's a general rule. I mean, everybody's soil is different. The permeability is different. So that is what the general rule is.
Okay. The second question I have is regarding window wells. Mine leak. I think there's supposed to be some sort of drain tile that takes the water down to the... the drain tile that goes around the base of the foundation. And someone told me that it may be clogged and that I should do something about that. Any ideas?
Well, how old's your home, Dave?
10 years old. and I built it from scratch, and we are on clay.
You're on clay.
I went into the hole, and, you know, it's solid clay.
Do you recall when they did they put a drain tile around the outside and around the inside of the foundation before they backfilled?
I know they did the outside.
Okay.
I don't think they inside because I had the misfortune of having someone come in and put in an extra sump crock because it's a 3,000 square foot home and they put one sump crock in the one corner.
Yeah.
And opposite quarters that I was having, you know, water in the house problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so they jackhammered around the foundation inside, put tile down, put in, and then hook up second sump pump. And I didn't even know that. But
We're starting to lose you a little bit. You must be on a cell phone, but I'll just address that a little bit more. First of all, I wanted to say they probably put one sump pump in because that satisfied the code, and that's, you know, that just reminds me that code is usually the minimum standard that you want to apply. Anything above code is usually you can be usually pretty good. Quite often, the drain tile around the outside has covered with a sock, and that sock is there to keep debris and clay and sand and that out of the drain tile. One thing you could do if you want to see what it looks like is you could run if that's tied into your sump, your original sump, you can hire someone to come out with a camera and run a camera in there and take a look. If there is some clogging, that can be cleaned out. There's like hydroblasting and things that can be done to do that. The other thing with regard to the window wells, when we put a window well in, we like to have at least as much gravel or pea gravel or sand below that as possible, so that moisture can fall into it and roll away from the foundation. Sometimes we'll even on large window wells we'll put in a French drain so that water will collect in the French drain and slowly seep away from the house. That's probably not the case with yours. Now, when you say yours leak, I'm assuming yours leak into the basement. And the first place they would leak would be typically if they fill up, if there's nothing in underneath to let the water drain, they'll fill up and they'll leak right at the window. Are you still on the line or did we lose you completely?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay, good. Does it leak through the window or does it leak down at the floor?
It leaks through the window.
Now, that means you need more drain underneath the more drainage, more gravel or pea gravel would probably be great. Sand. And like I say, we usually go down as far as we possibly can with something that would allow water to flow through and out. You could also try covering them as part of that, too.
I've added little clear plastic covers to help mitigate some of that water coming in. However,
so you're getting groundwater in there, maybe?
It could be. It's a mystery. I've tried a number of things. The next step is to have a contractor come out and, you know,
pull the
stones away and actually get down into wherever it is.
That sounds like a good plan. I don't know. Yeah. John?
Yeah. Well, Dave, again, standard rules, just like that 10-foot rule, is that you want to dig out at least 1 foot below that window.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ken mentioned there's a lot of permeable things you can put in there so that the water runs through. The very best thing that we found is washed stone.
Mm-hmm.
And half-inch to inch-and-a-half stone gives you 40% airspace. So you can actually figure out how many gallons of water you can contain in that area. So before you spend money on a contractor, what may be happening, you may be right, this may be surface water. If it's clay soil, when it's dry, it pulls away from the foundation. When it then rains, that little crack along the foundation fills up with water, and where does it end up? It ends up in the window wells. Then after you get a couple rainy days, it swells up again. So before you do anything else, let's dig it out a foot below the windows, put in some inch and a half to half-inch wash stone, mm-hmm. and see how that works.
Very good.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates Fitchburg, our guest today as we talk home maintenance and repair, Amanda Magnus, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a home maintenance or repair question, I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. So, Marty Anasio, it is your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, you're welcome. I have a very old house. It's probably about 130 years old. And there was a back porch at one time, which previous to my ownership was enclosed and made into a laundry room. So what I have is a laundry room and then access to the basement from that. It slopes out to the house towards the back door. And I want to bring that floor up and make it level and put a new flooring down. And I'm just wondering how to best do that because there's a door there and I can't raise the door. But I would like to bring the floor up. So I'm wondering, is that not a possibility, or is there a way to that I can remedy that?
Well, are you familiar with the artist Escher? There's this artist that did all these beautiful structures that were completely nonsensical when you started analyze them.
Familiar with him.
Escher, yeah.
And that's kind of what you've got going there, because if you raise the floor, the door doesn't work. If you raise the door... I mean, you can't raise the door, but you could replace the door with a custom-sized door.
Right.
If your floor is originally a porch floor, it's probably slopes, maybe possibly half inch to an inch per lineal foot. So,
At least that. Yeah.
Okay. And if it's structurally sound underneath, from a structural standpoint, you can fur it up by ripping sleepers. That are, that will level the floor and then put plywood down on top and then finish your floor the way you'd like. That's pretty straightforward. Then for the door, like I say, one thing you could do is you can replace the door with a door that's been specially cut. Mm-hmm. There's several steel doors, fiberglass insulated doors, and wood doors that can be done to. You run into another problem then, and that's outside. When you step out of that, do you have a step going out the door, or is it going you right to a landing or right to a grade?
It goes to a deck, which is essentially the same level as the existing.
Then you should be okay, because if you step down when you go out, you might exceed the maximum height differential between the outside and the inside.
Yeah.
So then you've got this other problem. Some people have done that, and then they have a 9-inch or 10-inch step out, and that's very, very dangerous. The maximum is 8 inches, and we try to go for 6 to 7 inches because it's just more comfortable for humans.
Sure.
So yeah, if looking at a door is reasonable, you could do that. I mean, another possibility that's maybe not as elegant would be to level off the a platform for the fixtures for your appliances, rather. Live with the rest, although, that's like I say, it's not that elegant.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jack in Eagle River, your turn. Hi, Jack.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about radon. I think I know what it is, but I wonder, where does it originate? How does it get into your house? Is it most prone is it most likely to be in the basement, or can it be upstairs? And finally, that's good enough.
Well, John, you've done a lot of work in this area.
Oh, we've done a lot of work with radon, more than I like to think about sometimes. Basically, radon and some short-lived byproducts of radon are an ionizing product. They are irradiating you. And it is naturally occurring in the soil. Some areas have more of it than others. There are places in Nevada where the soil almost glows. In Wisconsin, we do have it in our soil, and its movement through the soil is usually determined by the permeability of the soil. So our friend who called Dave from Milwaukee with all the clay around his house, well, he may not have much radon in his house because that clay is really good at stopping things. But then if you get north of Sun Prairie, here near Madison, where we're in the deep sandy and gravelly soils, we get some pretty high radon levels. People who have houses on rock outcroppings will get pretty high radon levels. So you've got cracks in the soil or permeability that allow that radiation to move towards your basement. Now, how does it get in? Well, your basement usually has cracks in it. Now, if you have a dirt crawl space or a dirt floor in your basement, you are almost certainly going to have a significant level of radon in your house. If you have a fairly new house, good quality concrete floors without many cracks, that is going to help keep it out the same way it would keep out water. The amount of radon in a house is also determined by the mechanical ventilation of the house and the number of air changes, and it gets really complicated. But let's say you got a real old-fashioned furnace and a real old-fashioned water heater and a laundry in the basement. Every time the furnace goes on, the water heater goes on, and the dryer goes on, it's making air changes in the basement. So it's putting some radon outside, but it's also producing a low-pressure area in the basement. So now you have more air pressure in the soil under the house than you do in the basement, and in comes the radon. So it gets to be really complicated. The way we suggest testing for it is to test for 6 months, from the middle of summer to the middle of winter, because whether the furnace is operating or not can have a big difference, whether the air conditioner is operating, whether the soil is frozen, all these things make a difference. And basically, the studies, we've known radon's been dangerous since at least 1988, when somebody put together 60-some studies that were made in Europe, the United States, mostly involving miners. There's been an ongoing study where they've been studying 68,000 miners and measuring their exposure to radon. The current standard is 4 picocuries per cubic deciliter of air, but there is at least some evidence that levels as low as 2 can actually increase the risk of lung cancer. Mm. Radon has also been associated, though this is not statistically conclusive, with MS and with a couple of other possible diseases.
Mm. So it's not good.
No, it is not good, and it is certainly worth testing your house. A 6-month test kit is probably going to run you at the most $75, including the lab work, and then you really know.
And if you let's say you've done the 6 months and you have significant levels as shown, then what?
It depends, Larry. If you have a newer house that has a sump crock or two like Dave's house and has the drain tile running all the way around under the floor, you can use that as a radon collection system by sealing the sump crock and then putting a low-volume fan so that it's continuously depressurized.
Oh, okay.
If you have a lot of cracks in your floor, you're generally going to be sealing them. If you have no sump crock, you're probably going to drill some holes in the floor and put some pickup points in. So sealing is going to be one thing. Depressurizing outside the envelope is another, and then the other is to introduce more air changes through mechanical ventilation.
Thanks again, Jack, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Chris and Trempolo, we're moving on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thank you for calling.
I've got a house that's about 35 to 40 years old. The windows this past winter developed pretty nasty draft. I was just kind of wondering what kind of compound I could use to seal the edges of those windows. Just trying to save myself a little money in the propane next year.
So are you saying that the windows are drafty between the sashes and the framework?
Or
where? Okay. And do you know what kind of windows they are? They're about 40 years old.
They're old Andersons with a window kind of flips out.
An awning.
Yeah.
Okay, so you kind of crank it or you push it and it opens up hinged on the top, basically. It sounds like your weather stripping has failed. And you may be able to get some weather stripping from Anderson directly and reinstall new weather stripping. They might even have some information that you can do as a homeowner. Short of that, these are 40-year-old windows. 40 years ago, let me put it this way. Windows have improved dramatically in the last 40 years. So ideally, you got deep pockets, plenty of money, buy new windows, done. But that's not the financial reality of most humans. So if you can replace the weather stripping and try it in the worst window you have and see how that works, and if that works there, then it's going to work in the rest of them, that would be a good start. Is there anything you want to add, John?
Chris, what sort of siding do you have in your house?
I believe it's aluminum.
It's an aluminum siding. Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking that maybe before we Obviously, if the weather stripping is bad, replace the weather stripping. I think that those old Anderson awnings, though, had metal weather stripping, which was much better than the vinyl stuff that tends to fall apart in 10 years. It's possible that the leak is actually coming around the window between the sheathing and the window. It is possible to pop off aluminum siding and seal the exterior, but we don't really know anything unless we do an energy audit on the house. Yeah. And I'm thinking that you're a real good candidate for a blower door
test. That's a good point. Yeah, I think he's right.
Yeah, let's throw a little science at this before we throw some money at it, and that way the money will be thrown at the right target. So since we don't really know what's going on, let's do a blower door test.
Okay.
You can get one by going to Focus on Energy and check their website. There'll be listings of people who do energy audits in your area. And where are you located?
In Trempealeau.
Yeah. I don't know anybody up there, but I'm sure there are people in that area. The rules of change started April 1st, appropriately April Fool's Day. And so you may not get as many credits as you would have in the past. It's still a very good program, and it'd be worth doing the check to see what other potential problems you have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you.
Very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Finally have open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. And let's go to Paul in Milwaukee next. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question about my son's house. He has about a 110-year-old home with a Cream City brick foundation. And a previous owner had painted the exterior of the brick with a black paint. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we want to take the black paint because we need to do off. For cosmetic reasons, number one, and number two, it needs retuck pointing in places. Mm-hmm. But we've been told that we can't sand the paint off, and I'm trying to find out what is a way to take the black paint off without damaging the soft Cream City brick.
Oh, well, John, what about it?
Yeah, Cream City is a tough brick to try to get paint off of, because if you put anything caustic on it, you can actually start dissolving the brick. Boy, to get it off, you're probably going to end up talking to a restoration contractor and doing some tests on it to see how hard the outer surface is. You can abrade it, but if you break the oxidized outer surface on the brick, you end up into the soft interior, and the brick will come apart very, very quickly.
Okay.
Do you know what kind of paint it was? Did the previous owner leave any of it around?
No, they didn't. At least we couldn't find any. So
you might just start by doing some pressure blasting with water, making sure that you don't damage the brick, and see if that will take it off. Otherwise, it turns into really quite an expensive proposition. And we have had issues with Cream City brick where we have tried to get paint off on historic projects where, I won't say money was no object, but you don't want to think about spending the money per square foot that they were, because they had state grants for it, and we could not get that brick really clean.
Black? They painted it black, huh?
Yeah, painted it black.
What you may want to do is get your pointing done, and if that brick and paint are really well adhered together, is simply go with the gray or something else.
Yep.
Okay, I just thought I'd give you a call, because I've asked a number of people, and not gotten an easy answer.
No.
that's because you've gotten the correct answer. There is no easy one here, Paul.
Thanks a lot for calling. Steve in Wausau, hello to you.
Yes, hi. I have got some old windows in an old house, built in the 70s. They're double hung. And I've replaced windows. I replaced one of them completely, took it out, put a new one in because the sill on the outside, the brick mold, were rotted. And it wasn't too bad because the new windows, I bought a Crestline, I think. It did not have the normal brick mold on the outside, so I was able to take the newer plastic brick mold and rip it down so that it would fit between the trim, the little J-channel on the siding.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't have any issue there. But I've got like 15 windows on the second floor, and I was thinking, boy, that's going to be a job. How are the pocket windows in comparison as far as energy efficiency compared what you guys feel compared to a new window, because the pocket window obviously is a lot easier. I'll lose a little window space, sure, because it's a little smaller, but they're so much easier than doing what I'm doing. If the outside brick mold and the sill is still good on most of them, it'd be a lot easier to do the pocket window.
Well, Steve, if you're talking about pocket windows, you're talking about replacement units that set inside the existing window frame?
Sort of inserts.
Right. Okay. Right. And those work. They can work extremely well if the frame is not rotted, if your existing frame is not rotted. You said downstairs you had a frame that was rotted.
Well, this one was a south-facing window, and, yeah, it was just a shot.
So that one's the exception.
The sill was rotted and the brick mold was rotted, so I decided to take the whole thing out, and I did. And it was a clean replacement. And like I said, I used it did not have a factory installed the brick mold on the outside. The window didn't, so it was pretty easy to put it back in and caulk it tight. And
well, the just back to the some of the. Issues with regard to the inserts, like I said, they work very well, especially the ones that come as a pre-packaged single unit. Marvin makes a really terrific one. We put a lot of them in. They're called the Marvin Ultra, Marvin Ultra Double Hung Insert is, I think, what they call them. Okay. And that's a great product. I understand that there are some other ones out there. I don't have a lot of experience with them. But the key is basically that you want to make sure that the framework is well insulated to the wall. Like the person that called a few minutes ago with the window frames, Chris, we suggested an energy audit. And this might be a good thing for you to do, too, because you might be able to find out if there's other things going on besides just the windows themselves going to heck.
Mm-hmm.
So, these
windows, the plastic... channels for the the double hung where they slide up and down, and mm-hmm. they have a spring in there, and they break, and boy, there's just so much of the plastic weather stripping around the outside is trash.
Yeah, that's true. So take a look at these. The other thing that you want to do is make sure that the replacement window is installed properly. So you can spend some time on the manufacturer's website, review their installation instructions. Are you going to try to do the work yourself, or are you going to hire
them? Oh, yes. No, I'm going to do it myself. I've done a lot of windows on an apartment building I have.
Well,
to say that I'm an expert installer, but it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. I mean, once you see one or two done, it's if you're a handy guy, it sounds like you're a handy guy, you can tackle it.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I do like the replacement units whenever the window frame itself is in mm-hmm. good shape. It also works well with windows that are out of square slightly, because you can mm-hmm. put the unit in, square it in the opening, and then caulk and seal the areas that the gaps basically, and it'll look fantastic and work just really really well.
Well, I've used that window and door expandable foam. The expandable foam that's made for windows and doors. So
yeah,
it's
it doesn't
not
put a lot
of aggressive expansion.
Exactly. Good.
Yeah,
good
that
thinking.
Seems to work pretty well.
You're. Yeah. You sounds like you got it under control.
Well, I try. Now, those Marvin windows, are those available to the general public or only through a dealer?
Well, you'd buy them through a distributor or a store. Let's see. You're in Wausau. I'm not sure.
There's going to be dozens of places.
Yeah, there'll be a dozen places that sell Marvin windows, and you can buy them there. They'll actually come out and measure them up for you, double-check the measurements, so they can actually walk you through it. A lot of very good people out there. We work with some people here in the area in Madison, and I'm sure Wausau's got plenty of good people. So just look up. You can start at Marvin's website, or you can just go. Nobody uses phone books anymore, do they?
So no, just I go to the...
Type
you can Google it. The new
yeah,
term.
Google it. Google it. Yeah, that's it. Google it.
there you go, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. And Damien in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Me and my wife, we have an existing cottage on some water, frontage or whatever, and we're contemplating on tearing it down because radon purposes and everything else associated with the old home. It has an original crawl space, so it's a dirt floor, and obviously we put a basement in the new house. And I was wondering, as far as in floodplain, how high up is a reasonably safe level from a floodplain area, as far as in foundation?
All right. You should be able to get that information from Milwaukee County, because they are going to manage most of the FEMA requirements. Basically, they will tell you what the elevation is. And, you know, let's say they're going to give you an elevation of 866.5 feet. Then you're going to have a surveyor mark that on your lot where that is. You know, usually it ends up being a post in the yard or a flag in a tree. And you will be amazed at how high it is. Mm-hmm. Now, none of your mechanical equipment, and let's take, we're going to pull out the number 850 out of my hat. We're going to say it's at 850. None of your mechanical equipment can be lower than 852. So that means if you put in a basement, you may have to hang the furnace from the ceiling or even have it up on the first floor. Secondly, if you have a basement, you're going to have tremendous design problems, because that basement has to be floodable and has to drain to grade. So that would mean putting the basement probably where the existing grade is. You are going to have FEMA flood vents in these walls, and those are going to need to be designed by a structural engineer. There is a good one in Madison that we often work with when we're working in floodplains. I really think you want to think about a crawl space with a sealed floor, and there are various ways of really lowering the construction costs by using a crawl space, because of this issue that it has to be drainable. So basically, you have a set of vents, so when it floods, that crawl space fills with water, but then as the water recedes, the water comes out of the flood space, out of the crawl space. So these vents are placed at two different elevations.
Okay.
So it is relatively complicated. What I would probably do is start with an architect or an engineer and let them talk to Milwaukee County and take the liability for getting everything put together. It's most certainly can be done. I mean, we've done two of them in the last year in floodplains, where it was really the same thing. It was old dirt crawl spaces, really, really nasty. And these people
wanted to. That's a spider web, really awful. Housing.
The other thing that we did on two of them this last year is we lifted the house up and we put, we actually saved the house and we simply put new foundations underneath them. That met the FEMA code.
I was contemplating that too, you know what I'm saying? But it's one of these add a porch on kind of house deal, you know? So every porch turned into a living space, and it's just gross and doesn't fit our style, I guess.
Yeah, so then you're going to want to start out with a structural analysis and perhaps a bulldozer. But use design professionals here, because you wouldn't believe the trouble that you can get into dealing with the FEMA codes if you just try to do it by yourself.
Understood. Yeah, I know the house where it sits, it's not in the floodplain, but part of my yard is, you know, and it's not a huge city lot, but...
So the house is not in the floodplain at all?
The house isn't, no, but part of the yard is. But I think if I were to go any lower, I'd probably, I'm probably 20 feet from a river edge.
Yes.
You know, so, and obviously, you know, where the water usually sits, it's probably about 33 inches below where my crawl space is now.
Right.
And I was just wondering what's too low as far as the water level.
Yeah, then depending upon your soil types, you're probably going to start with an architect, and that architect may want to consult with a geotechnical engineer. You want to make sure that whatever you put up, you don't have to over-design. So that the problem is with soils is we design our foundations for dry soils. You know, they're 40, 50, 60 pounds per square foot. Then when you saturate that soil, all of a sudden you've got 110 pounds per square foot, and your foundation just wasn't designed for that.
Yeah.
Completely understood. Interesting. Well, I'm glad I talked to you. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates Fitchburg are guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ken Adams and John Freiberger are guests today here on the Ideas Network as we talk home renovation and repair. Just to let you know, sort of a reminder, tomorrow I will be at the Fox Cities Book Festival and will be broadcasting from there, from the UW Fox Valley campus at the Student Union. And that's going to be a lot of fun. Jerry Apps is a garden talk show. Jerry Apps has got a new book out on gardening. It's called Garden Wisdom: Lessons Learned from 60 Years of Gardening, and I know we're going to have a lot of fun. And, of course, you are invited. Come early and stay late. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, again, we're at the UW Fox Valley campus as part of the Fox Cities Book Festival. We'll be broadcasting from the Student Union at the UW Fox Valley campus. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. And looking forward to hearing what Damien in Viroqua has for a question. Hi, Damien.
Hi, good morning. So I've got a house that's about half of it is an exposed basement. And it was a refrigerator over the winter. And then when things got really warm, it was practically dripping with water. So I'm looking to insulate it, especially I'm wondering about the exposed area. What your recommendations are for that, and if there's anything I can or should do to the outside. It's just a cement block wall, essentially, for any of the exterior that's exposed.
When you said cement block, John and I just start shaking our heads.
Yeah, we start pointing at each other, saying, you go ahead and give them the news. Well,
no, it's your turn, John.
Okay, all right, yeah. Well, all right, cement block. So the entire basement is cement block. Is that correct, Damien?
Yeah, it was built about 1950.
About 1950, okay. The first thing you want to determine is that cement block in good condition. If you use a laser level, are the walls out of plumb? Are they bowing in at all?
So, and they're in excellent condition. Good. I for sure check that out.
So you have well-drained soil then?
Excellent. We have no water issues at all in the basement.
Good. What I'm going to suggest, there are two ways of insulating a wall. You can insulate it on the inside, or you can insulate it on the outside. What is your preference?
I guess I don't really have any preference. I'm just mostly, I couldn't believe the moisture that came off of it. You know, when we got those 80-degree days, you know, we would open a door, and the moisture in the basement was amazing.
Yeah. So you had a cold, damp space, so you ended up with the structure being the first condensing surface. So
yeah,
you're probably going to have to think a little bit about dehumidification as well.
Okay.
Which
we have a dehumidifier in the basement running.
Okay. If you did want to insulate from the exterior, what I would take a look at on the block is perhaps what's called an exterior insulation finish system. And you have a lot of contractors in your area that can probably do that for you. That uses a 1 or 1.5 inch foam on the exterior, covers it with what looks like a plaster, which is actually an acrylic that is applied over a mesh. That gives you something that actually looks fairly nice. Plus, it also will give you from anywhere from R6 to R9 insulation, depending upon how thick you put it up. Okay. If you're going to insulate the interior, are you going to use the space for anything, or are you just trying to cut down on heat loss?
Well, we would like to use it for a family room kind of area.
Okay. Ken, throw your 2 cents in on this, but there's really two ways of doing it. One is with a rigid foil-faced insulation. That insulation has to meet the 15-minute thermal barrier, but I know that Solitex and several other companies have that. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about that material is that it really doesn't, if it gets wet, you wipe it off. It's foil-faced. The other way of doing it would be to stud the walls and to use fiberglass batting between the studs, or a combination of the two if you wanted it really well insulated.
Okay.
The nice thing about the foil batting is that helps act as a bit of a vapor barrier because your concrete block are so vapor permeable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've never had any water in that basement, Damien?
No, we've owned it. We've only owned it since August, but in Viroqua we had a huge rain about the month before.
And we
got nothing in it, no.
Okay, because I always hate to get into these finishing the basements without putting in drain tile unless we really don't need it, but it sounds like you maybe really don't need it.
Yeah, we haven't had any. In fact, I had to tear out some stuff from below, and there was really no moisture or water issues at all from the old stuff that I took out.
The other thing that we have been doing where we have basements with a lot of dampness is we have been going ahead and using the studs, but we've actually used steel studs rather than wood, and we've put them on a treated plate. That way you really have nothing that can get moldy and decay.
Okay.
We've used fiberglass batting without any friction face on it, and then we've actually used a cellulose-less drywall. That is a drywall that has fiberglass instead of cellulose, so that even if you sprayed it with a water hose, you couldn't get mold to grow on it. So take a look at products that are not going to sustain fungal growth if we continue to get these issues with the condensation, if the dehumidifier dies on you or something, so that we can really withstand a certain amount of dampness. And that may help a lot. And, of course, if we get it warmer down there, then we're probably not going to get the condensation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep.
Can I ask one quick question?
Sure.
That foil-faced that you were talking about, is that like a rigid foam that has, I've seen it, like a silvery foil face to it?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. And then would you tape those seams after you put it up?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your help.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Kathy posted something on my Facebook page. What's the best flooring for a kitchen that has a lot of foot traffic? We put cork in our kitchen. Ken put it in, and
yeah,
it's been great.
Yeah, it should. I've seen cork floors that were 50 years old that still look good. You know, it depends on the feet.
Yeah.
I think if you're walking through, a lot of people take their shoes off when they're in the house, so there's very little hard sole foot traffic. That gives you many, many more options. If you're not inclined to take your shoes off, then you want something that's going to scuff up less than something else. Cork, one of the nice things about cork is that it's a green product. It's relatively inexpensive. It's flexible.
It's
so
comfortable.
It's comfortable to walk on because it's flexible. It's a very soft wood, and it's you know, it's very nice on the joints for people of a certain age like I am.
Well, even, you know, Renee's, you know, she does more cooking than I do by a wide margin, and she's standing in there a lot, and she's just amazed at how much nicer it is than the hardwood floors we had in our other home.
One of the downsides, though, so that you're aware of that, is that if there is damage to the floor, it's a little harder to fix than maybe some other floors.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them just interlock or they glue down. That's a great one. Tile is also a nice floor for traffic. It's a little less forgiving if you drop a glass on it. And then, of course, linoleum is there's so many cool linoleums out there.
And it's not like the old linoleums of
they're considered green products, and they're very inexpensive, and
they look good.
You can get some cool stuff. So that's where I'd start.
Gina wonders, is planning on repainting her garage that has some wood damage in a couple of spots. What should I do with those spots before I paint? I assume she wants to fix them.
Yeah, you'll have to fix them. Should I jump in here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Gina, a couple things. One is, if it's very small, you might be able to chisel out the rot and then put this two-part system in. It's an epoxy Bondo. You go to a local Ace Hardware, and you can probably purchase it about $10 a can. You mix a hardener with it, and then you trowel it in. Be careful not to put too much on, because it's very difficult to sand off once it kicks or cures. Larger stuff, you'll have to replace the board or a portion of the board, and then you open up a lot of problems, potential problems with moisture getting behind there. You want to make sure everything's caulked in, sealed properly. So each level of rot requires a little more work. I hope that helps.
And Cassandra has a house 7 years old, vinyl siding. They don't want to use a pressure washer. Can we do it with water and dish soap and a long-handled brush to clean it?
Sure.
No, certainly you can. Vinyl siding is pretty forgiving. Dawn, just soap will take almost anything off of almost anything. One of my favorite things. Cassandra, be sure to peek in back of that siding first to make sure you've got a water barrier on your house. If it's blue foam or something like that, that is okay, or you might see Tyvek or even building paper. If you see oriented strand board, well, then we've got an issue of introducing any water against that siding.
Yeah, anything that looks like natural wood you want to be careful with.
Exactly.
Paul in Marshfield, hello.
Hi there. I'm finishing a basement off, and I have in-floor heat in a slab, but I want to make like a rec room on one end, and I don't want the noise traveling through like the floor, the upstairs floor, but I'm looking for some product like where I can insulate it from the noise, but yet still have that radiant heat going through. Do you know of anything like that, or what would be the best way to soundproof the floor above?
I'm not entirely clear. Are you saying you have radiant floor heat above? And
No, in the slab, in the basement slab.
Okay.
I have radiant heat.
All right.
And I don't want to lose that radiant heat going up through the floor above. I want it to, you know, continue to go up through the floor, but I'd also like to soundproof it.
Sure. There's actually a way of doing that. It's a little complicated. It involves two layers of foam. It involves a layer of beadboard against the joists, and then a layer of the blue denser foam board underneath to absorb and deflect. And ideally, these would actually get hung on what are called hat channel with little hangers and then drywalled so that you do not have a solid connection between the floor joists above and the ceiling below.
But the problem, though, is he's not allowing heat through. By putting insulation board up there, he's not allowing the heat from the basement to work its way up.
I thought he wanted to keep the heat in the basement.
Oh, I'm confused and disoriented.
we'll ponder that here on the Ideas Network. News coming up. Taking a look today at home renovation and repair with our two guests, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates, Fitchburg. Thank you for listening, and Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along. And Ron in New Berlin has a question, and I think we'll go right there. Hi, Ron.
Well, hello there, Larry. Good to see you, or to hear you, and to have the expertise available for an issue in our own house.
Sure.
It was built in 1978. It's a concrete block wall basement. And when we bought the house, there was a hairline crack about 5 feet off the floor in the one section of the basement. Most of the basement's fine, but there is this is the area, I guess it would be the area that where the land next to the house is lowest. I have put more clay fill on that area of the house, and even under that put a heavy sheet of plastic. But now, 13 years later or so, the crack has now expanded to about an eighth of an inch. And I wondered, it's pushing in, if I put a 4 foot level on it, it's about, I'll say, 3/4 of an inch out of square, out of through perpendicular. And I know that there's some state information on a website about how to do this yourself, but it seems like a pretty major project.
It is.
To fix it myself.
Yeah.
Thought I would ask your advice.
Well, if it's only marginally bad, one of the things that you can do is you can install what's called what I call a dead man, which is basically a concrete pier that you pour, or it could be a block pier if it's scheduled correctly, that you install inside the building. But it's a little tricky. You need a footing. You need to be able to attach it up to the joists above, and it needs to be sized properly. So it's not something that we could just say over the phone, or you could read a website and deduce what you have to do necessarily, unless you have some engineering background. So you may be very well served, to hire a structural engineer to help you design that dead man. It'll cost you, a few $100, I think, but in the long term, it'll be a real lifesaver. If it's a bad crack, then, or if it's getting worse exponentially, then you might need to do something else, like excavate outside and start again. So I know.
I wondered about that too. I had a home inspector look at the house.
Good.
When we bought it years ago, and he said if it does change, and I did call him, and he said you could put you can go on the Wisconsin website, and then you have to put these, what he would suggest were steel girders or
steel would work.
Yeah, and
but there again, you need to size it properly and to know how to fasten it I was going to say fascinate. Sure. Fascinate top and bottom.
Yeah, the steel is called a flexural member, and we design those all the time for people with concrete block foundations.
Mm-hmm.
The National Association of Home Inspectors has sort of a standard for concrete block walls, and basically, if the wall is out of plumb by a half inch but less than an inch, repair it. If it hits an inch, remove it and replace it.
I see.
And we prefer the steel. Ken's idea of a buttress does work. The problem with the buttress is that to design them correctly, they have to be grouted solid, and you have to have 4 or 5 inch rebar inside them, and you have to make a hole in the floor upstairs to get the rebar in and to get the grout in. So we found the flexural members to be a lot less expensive to work with. What I would suggest you do, you're in New Berlin, so you've got a lot of people in that area, but I would go ahead and actually consult with a professional engineer who knows something about concrete block foundations. And you're going to find a firm up there that probably does one a week, because there are a lot of them in that area and there are a lot of issues. I have a standard flexural member drawing that I have, but I think you really need to consult with somebody about why is it moving, as well as will a flexural member then stop it from moving.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's the water pressure, as you explained early on.
Yep.
Good.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Reggie in Milwaukee, turning to you. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a first-time homeowner right here with a the home is 1940, pre-World War II, colonial. But the problem is actually with a three-way wiring, a three-way toggle switch that I have that's lighted. When it's in the off position, it's supposed to be lighted. And I also just installed a three-way dimmer switch in the dining room with no problem whatsoever. Got that to work. The two access points for that dimmer in the dining room work fine. But I'm upstairs now trying to get this three-way toggle switch to work. And every time I connect it, the actual lighted toggle is lit. But when I flip the switch, the circuit breaker goes out. It blows a circuit. And I don't know. I've been hooking it up all kinds of ways, and I keep blowing a circuit every time I try and flip the switch on it. Since it's from the 40s, none of the copper wires in here have any sort of noticeable marks to let me know which part of the toggle switch I should hook it up to. There is a white wire that looks like someone added that later on, which I'm thinking is possibly the common wire, and I've hooked that to the common, and that's not working either. So I'm kind of at a loss for words now.
Well, it's kind of a tricky one, because three-way switches can be a little bit deceptively tricky. They look simple, and yet when you get into them, you do this. Typically, a white wire that doesn't have any other markings on it is the common. It's not what you would consider the hot wire. It's the one that goes to the common bar in the panel. So, if
you interject real quick, I think you're right on that, because of when I look at what the white wire is connected to, it's connected to two other wires that are going to both sides of where the other three wires are coming out of.
And they're all white wires, or are they just
they're all fabric, like dark fabric that's wrapped around copper wire.
Well, you're kind of playing with fire here, and you want to be careful not to cause a fire. So, do you know how to use a multimeter?
No, but I could pick one up, I'm sure, at the hardware store.
Well, it might be more cost effective for you to just hire an electrician for an hour.
Yeah.
Because he can come in, he can troubleshoot it, he could fix it, and he could explain it to you in less time than it would take you to go to the store, buy the meter, come home, read the manual, and try to figure out how to use it correctly. And it would be cheaper probably than the meter. Well, not necessarily. You can buy cheap meters, but still, I think that's the way to go, because there's some little tricks that you can learn, and it sounds like you like to get your hands involved, and you're a handy kind of guy. So I'm sure you hire an electrician, ask him to explain a few things to you, take care of this problem, and the next time you'll be in better position.
Yeah, I I think I do have a good connect with the electrician because I just had them here doing some putting some GFCIs on the outside of the house and
Perfect.
Got a business card. So I'll call him back and see if he can maybe cut me a deal for coming out a second time.
All right,
sounds
cool.
good. Thanks, Reggie, for calling. Appreciate it, and good luck to you. Jane in Appleton, what's on your mind? Hi.
Hi. I have a two-part question. First is actually kind of a new construction. We have a cottage in northern Wisconsin, and the elements and nature and winds wreak havoc on the outside, and we're looking at tearing it down and putting up something new. That opens up some other issues with holding tanks, septic fields, well systems. The first part of my question is, how much of those other issues like septic and well are left with the contractor for doing permitting, et cetera, and how much are ours? The second part of my question is, my husband says that if we do this, he found there's some kind of a concrete siding, and he said, I think we should use that, and I never heard of such a goofy thing, so I wanted your comments on that. And
oh,
thanks.
It's good
I'll take
stuff.
My answer off the air.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, as far as the first part of your question, Jane, that depends upon your contract with the contractor. You can make him fully responsible for all of the permitting and have him manage that for you. And, of course, if you're in Appleton and he's someplace north of the Pine River, that may be what you want to do. The contractor up there probably knows the local county officials who to talk to and probably best left to him. But, of course, be sure to check his references, his licenses, and get copies of his certification of insurance. Now, concrete siding, it's wonderful stuff.
Yeah, we use it a lot.
Yes, indeed. There basically are two manufacturers in the United States. One is the CertainTeed Corporation. You can go online and take a look at CertainTeed weather boards. The other is the James Hardy Corporation, and you can go online and look at all the wonderful things they have. They have what looks like beveled siding. They have what looks like cedar shingles. They have panels. They have all sorts of different things. You also, while you're there, after you pick out your product, is you want to download the installation instructions, and you want to copy those to your contractor.
Right.
Because we are finding that unless Adams Design Construction has done the work, 90% of it is put up wrong.
Well, that's kind of you to say, but it is true that a lot of people don't know how to install it, and you need to protect yourself.
It is a newer product, and we frequently see it put up incorrectly. Now, there are standard colors, none of which you'll probably like, because I don't much care for any of them, but you can have it painted. And we always suggest that you have it pre-finished and painted on all sides just as if it was cedar. Otherwise, especially in northern Wisconsin where you get dampness in the woods and the lakes, you're going to get a lot of efflorescence. It is a wonderful product. If you get a grass fire around the house, it's not going to catch on fire like other things. It lasts almost forever. It is very tough. It is sort of a green product because of its very long life. And you only have two manufacturers to choose from, both of which have been around for a long time. And both of them are very consumer friendly.
It's a great product. We had, you put it on our lake home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Bomb-proof, beautiful, holds paint well,
yeah.
Long warranty. And you can have pretty much any color you want, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And hail?
Not a
problem.
Nope.
Very tough.
Pete in La Crosse. Hello.
Larry and gentlemen. The kitchen of my house is on a cantilever of about 2 feet where the cantilever beams are much too short. So I'm planning to add a steel beam under there to raise the house back up. And I'm comfortable with the calculations on the steel and everything. But that beam has to sit on something, and it's going to sit on a cement block wall. I think they're 10-inch block. So I got to beef up the top edge of that concrete wall, I think. And that's my question. What do I do to sufficiently beef up the top edge of that block wall to carry the load of the steel beam?
You're probably going to end up having to grout the top of the wall with a non-shrink grout, and you might have to put a half-inch steel spreader plate there as well, depending upon the load. Now, a 2-inch cantilever, unless this is a two-story house and you've got roof load and two floor loads coming down on the cantilever, it probably isn't too bad, but take a look at what your point load is going to be where that beam crosses the fulcrum, and then you should be able to figure the compressive strength of your block. I would, as a safe factor, probably come up with
three. 3,000 pounds per square foot is probably
I'm thinking more like 1,500 because this is we don't know the quality of the block
also
and
be
the
very
age of the block.
Yeah.
So I'd be a little conservative, and there's nothing wrong with putting a spreader plate to make sure that we get that point load distributed a little bit.
Right, we want to distribute that. Is that spreader plate entirely metal, or is it wood in contact with the block and then metal above that?
Entirely metal. You never want to put wood between concrete and steel.
Okay.
Because the characteristics of the material are just entirely too different.
Okay, entirely metal spreader plate, and then grout full the top row of blocks or the top two row?
Probably the top two row. The weight is going to come out at a 45-degree angle, so if you've got an 8-inch beam, you want to come down at least a couple of feet, figure the 45-degree angle. At that point, it's spread out pretty well in the wall. And again, this is all load-dependent.
Okay,
There's a big difference between 800-pound load and 8,000-pound load we're imposing it.
Yeah, you're talking about the force vectors coming down at 45-degree angle inside the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And filling that in. Okay.
All right, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Patsy in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. What I'm dealing with here is about an 80 to 100-year-old home, inaccessible crawl space. I was tested about 8 years ago. There was no mold and no radon. And then a while back, I had a sink overflow and got some allergy problems, so we found mold. So at this point, they tore all the carpeting out and the linoleum that was not asbestos. Now, the front part of the house, I can tell, has sand, and the back part of the house is cement. My question is, at this point, should I take the floorboards up and put any plastic down? Would that be necessary, or can I get away with something else?
Well, that's a very good question. If we've got this information correctly, it sounds like you have some water damage in your house, and you've got some mold under the carpet in the linoleum area.
Yeah, the padding was detected with mold. So when they tore it up, they tore everything up, and then there was an old linoleum floor underneath that was tested, and it was not asbestos, and they took that right with them.
Good.
I mean, everything went. So right now, there's just old plank boards down.
And then your floor underneath is half cement or concrete and half
sand.
Well,
yeah, the crawl space, from what I can tell, there's an opening in the house here. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't go under there. You can only, you know, look. Well, and about a good 80% of the house has cement that I can tell. But there was an added on part, it looks like, an added on part, and that I can tell. Because the vent on the outside that I do open to vent it, you can tell that there's dirt there. So at this point, we'd like to put a subfloor down. I'd like to put a subfloor down, plywood, and then either carpet or put something else down. But if it's torn this far, would it be feasible or good to take up the planks in the front part of the house and put down plastic? My worry is I don't want to get into something that they can't really tell me if there's mold down there. The house tested out. Mm-hmm. With no mold.
And they couldn't get a probe down in there and take a look. They didn't take up any subfloor.
No. Mm-hmm. No.
Oh, this is so complicated. So this, Patty, this crawl space is what, like 18 inches or a foot tall, and that's
it? Yeah, if that.
Okay. Very, very difficult. Well, I have a couple of concerns. We ended up picking up a house this last winter and raising it up because we had so much decay in the floorboards and the crawl space was so light that that's the only way we could save the house is we actually had a house mover come in, pick the thing up 4 feet, repaired all the decayed boards and set them down. If you have mold that went through linoleum into carpet, I'm a little concerned we have enough moisture in that crawl space that you could be developing fungal growth and that we could have some significant issues with the framing. I think the first thing you need to do is get some real discovery done. You're going to have your contractor come in, cut a hole in that floor.
Okay.
And even if it's only 18 inches, get down there and find out what is really going on.
Not you, him.
Yes, not you. These crawl spaces, the venting of the crawl spaces, this is something that we do not have a good solution for short crawl spaces. Mm-hmm. I don't even know whether it's a good idea to vent them in the summer, although the code requires it because of the condensation
we get. I've read two different things on that. Some say don't vent and some say vent.
And the code says that you have to vent. It has to be vented all year long to the inside and the outside, but I'm not sure that's a good idea, which is why I say this is so complicated. So we need to start out with a little bit of discovery to see what you are really facing.
Well, my concern is, since the inside of the house now has tested out without mold, that if we open up that crawl space in the house, am I going to have more mold problems inside the house once we open it up?
Can you open it from the outside?
No.
No, I think they need to open the inside. The thing is, you can clean up. Now, first, it is impossible for your house to test no mold. That is simply impossible, because if you test the outside air on a day like today, you're probably going to get 6,000 spores per cubic foot. So I don't know what they meant by that kind of test. The only thing that really works is a scientific air test, and they cost about $2,000. But you really need to find out what is going on underneath that floor, because if you do have decay developing in the framing, then you need to really figure out what's going on. As far as putting plastic under the floorboards, yeah, plastic is wonderful. It does stop vapor transfer, and then you're going to make approximately 5,000 holes in it. So how effective is that going to be? I think what you're going to find is you're going to have to seal the rest of the floor down there. You may have to introduce dehumidification. It is possible that once that floor is sealed, you can actually have air changes into the house. Do you have heat ducts that run under there?
No, there's no heat ducts. There's only a little cozy heater in this house, but I do have an air exchanger up in the attic.
Okay. So let's get your contractor in and do a little bit of discovery first and see what's really going on under there.
One little side note is, when you have the floor open and he's looking around there, in addition to doing all of the work that John is suggesting, take a bunch of pictures of what's underneath there, because you never know if you're going to need to refer to those pictures in the future with as you're coming up with a solution for the problem.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Anna, do you have a quick question?
I had called before, and I was fiberglass windows were recommended to me. Mm-hmm. And it was mentioned that one company has a builder series that's more economical. Do they remember what the name brand of that was?
Well, the company that I use for fiberglass windows is Marvin. Marvin has a window called the Ultrex, Ultrex, I believe, which is an all fiberglass window. And it can be made to any size, and it's an absolutely wonderful window. It exceeds the Energy Star rating, and it's far superior to anything like vinyl. It handles a lot of moisture. It's a very beautiful window. So I would recommend starting there.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for calling. And, boy, here we are, out of time. Thanks, guys.
Well, thank you. This was fantastic.
Yeah, we had lots of great calls, and you'll be back in a couple months, and we'll do it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
We look forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you both. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction. We've got his website up on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates Fitchburg, our guests, and they'll be back in a couple months, and we'll do this all over again. Just to let you know, again, a reminder, tomorrow I'll be broadcasting live from the Fox Cities Book Festival, and I'll be broadcasting on the campus of the UW-Fox Valley in the Student Union, and that's going to be a lot of fun. We're looking for a nice crowd, and I'm sure they're going to be a good crowd there, and hope you'll come, too. My guest, Jerry Apps. Jerry's got a new book out. It's called Garden Wisdom: Lessons Learned from 60 Years of Gardening. I've read it. It's a wonderful book, and I know we're going to have a great fun talking with Jerry. And, of course, you're going to be able to visit with him and answer. He'll answer your questions, and we'll just have a really good time. Don't forget to click, when you're on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, click like while you're there, and we're going to send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. And thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.